Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with increasing rumours of war, in spite of warnings from Angela Merkel and the United States scaling down of joint exercises with Israel. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu called for a clear red line to stop Iran. The former Senior Director for Middle East Affairs at the National Security Council, Flint Leverett, joins us to discuss a possible pre-election Israeli strike on Iran and the IAEA report that Iran has doubled its capacity to enrich uranium at the underground Fordo plant. Then we'll discuss what was barely mentioned at the Republican Convention, Afghanistan. Rajiv Chandrasekaran, a senior correspondent and associate editor at the Washington Post, joins us. He is the author of the new book, Little America, The War Within the War for Afghanistan, and we'll look into the serial blunders that have mired the U.S. in its longest war, a war in which most NATO casualties now result from Afghans turning their guns on their Western trainers. Then finally, we will look under the radar to examine blowback in the cyber wars going on now in the Gulf and elsewhere with veteran intelligence correspondent Richard Sale. We'll examine the August 15th cyber attack on Saudi Aramco and an August 29th attack against Qatar's Rasgas by malware called Shamoon, apparently in retaliation for a cyber attack on the Iranian oil industry earlier this spring by malware called Wiper. Joining us now is Flint Leverett, who directs the Iran Project at the New America Foundation, where he's also senior research fellow. He currently teaches at Pennsylvania State University School of International Affairs, and from 1992 to 2003, he served as senior director for Middle East Affairs at the National Security Council on the Secretary of State's policy planning staff, and as a CIA senior analyst. He left the George W. Bush administration and government service in 2003 because of disagreements about the Middle East policy and the conduct of the war on terror. He's the author of Dealing with Tehran, Assessing U.S. Diplomatic Options Towards Iran, and the forthcoming Going to Tehran, Why the United States Must Come to Terms with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Welcome to Background Briefing, Flint Leverett.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And I spoke last week with the former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, who served in the Bush administration, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with a fairly alarming scenario, and a somewhat surprising one. Now, I just mentioned in the opening that Angela Merkel has apparently telephoned Prime Minister Netanyahu and urged him not to strike Iran. The U.S. has just scaled back its austere challenge exercise with Israel by a considerable amount. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dempsey, has said the United States wants no part of a war with Iran. And all of this is happening, but of course today Prime Minister Netanyahu again called for the international community to come up with a clear red line. So what Wilkerson was saying, though, was that contrary to what we normally think of, that because of Netanyahu's close relationship with Romney, that he would attack Iran in order to help elect Romney. Colonel Wilkerson's scenario suggested that, in fact, they would do it to sort of help get Obama over the top and therefore co-opt him and own him and have him buy into their policy. What do you make of that scenario?
Well, I have the highest regard for Larry Wilkerson professionally and personally, and I almost always find myself in agreement with him. I think on this, I might have some differences in the way I read what's going on and what I think is likely to happen over what time frame where Israel is concerned. I think that Netanyahu faces two big constraints in terms of being able to carry out a strike before our election here in November. One, and this will continue to be a constraint for some time, he faces just a capacity constraint. You know, the amount of damage that Israel on its own could do to Iran's nuclear infrastructure is not all that great. Frankly, the assessment of the American military is that the new enrichment site at Fordo, which is underground hardened, that the Israelis simply can't destroy that facility from the air. They don't have the ordnance and planes and so forth that they would need to be able to target it and get the bombs down to the centrifuge chambers. And that is just a physical reality that Netanyahu or any Israeli prime minister would have to deal with. There's also a political constraint, which might be somewhat more flexible, but it's still a real constraint, which is that the prime minister of Israel doesn't have the same measure of commander-in-chief authority that, say, an American president does. And typically, these decisions in Israel to initiate the use of military force to start a war, these have to be taken on a broader basis. At a minimum, Netanyahu needs to have his defense minister on board with Barak in that position. That's presumably not an issue. But he also has to have a fairly strong degree of consensus in this so-called inner security cabinet of 8 cabinet ministers. And then there's a broader 15-member defense and security committee in the cabinet. And the tradition, the expectation in Israel is that to do something like this, he would have to have very, very strong consensus in both of these bodies. And all of the indications that we have are that at least right now, today, he does not have that degree of consensus. And certainly the military leadership, the leadership of Israel's intelligence services, is pretty uniformly opposed to Israel undertaking this as a unilateral operation. And I think that makes it more difficult for Netanyahu to try and achieve this degree of consensus with his colleagues. And I think that's going to continue to be a constraint on him. Now, I think that Larry is pointing to something that's very important in what the Israelis are doing, that the Israeli military, polls would show the Israeli public, you know, they are not uncomfortable with the idea of striking Iran, but they want to do it in cooperation with the United States or have the United States just undertake the mission at some point. And so I think that an important part of what Netanyahu is doing is, in a sense, trying to influence our politics, our debate here, in ways that are going to set up the United States, whether under a reelected President Obama or under a new Romney administration, to set up the United States to undertake that mission, basically to start a war with Iran if Iran won't stand down from enriching uranium. I think that's a very important part of what Netanyahu and Barak are doing right now. I tend to think that that's going to take a longer period of time to play out than between now and November 6th. This is something that Netanyahu and Barak are working on. I think this is really going to come to a head more in 2013 under, as I said, either reelected Obama or new Romney administration, that's really when the Israelis are going to be pushing full bore for America to, from their perspective, step up to the plate and hit Iran hard. I think they understand there's really no way that they can get the Obama administration to undertake this prior to November 6th. And so what they're doing is trying to set things up for after that. At least that's the way I read it. You know, there is this argument that, well, if Israel struck, it might in some way drag the United States in. But I think that's really assuming a lot. You would have to make a lot of assumptions about how Iran responds, how then the United States responds. There would just be so many variables in that scenario that Israel couldn't control if it started down this path. I think it would be in incredibly high stakes for Israel to try and do something like that, you know, launch a strike on its own, and thinking maybe to get they could get the United States dragged in, or alternatively that somehow if they struck, Iran wouldn't really respond, and so you'd avoid all of these downsides of higher oil prices, you know, economic downturn in the West as a result that could really, you know, rebound to Israel's long-term disadvantage. So, I mean, we'll see what happens between now and November 6th, but I tend to think this is going to play out over a longer time frame, and it's really going to come to a head next year.
Again, I'm speaking with Flint Leverett, who served as the Senior Director for Middle East Affairs at the National Security Council, on the Secretary of State's policy planning staff, and as a CIA senior analyst. He left the George W. Bush administration and government service in 2003 because of disagreements about Middle East policy and the conduct of the war on terror. And I think in many ways, George W. Bush, not only was the Iraq War, of course, the victor in the Iraq War appears to be Iran, the loser appears to be the United States and particularly the Iraqi people. But also, I think, isn't it pretty clear that that disastrous axis of evil speech happened at a time when essentially, George W. Bush cut the legs off Khatami, the reformist-minded Iranian leader who was trying to basically make some accommodation with the rest of the world and stop the isolation of Iran. And since he had his had essentially got completely undercut by Bush and by the Iraq War. And, of course, the entreaties that were made after Baghdad fell, Dick Cheney gave them the back of the hand and basically said, we don't talk to evil. And so now we're stuck with them, with what's often described as the new right in Iran. And, you know, clearly, if I just was reading the article by Ray Takai in the National Interest, All the Ayatollah's Men, that there's no question that Iran has not gone the way of China, for example, in moderating. It's as though Mao is still in charge in China in terms of what's happening in Iran. So how much do you hold the U.S. responsible for missing the opportunity to continue the moderation under Khatami, and instead we've ended up with this hardline reactionary regime?
Well, I think that it's certainly true that at the time Bush gave his Axis of Evil speech, it was his January 2002 State of the Union address. I mean, the Iranians were working with us in some incredibly positive ways in Afghanistan. My wife was directly involved in the negotiations that we had with the Iranians over Afghanistan and al-Qaeda, and they did some really amazingly helpful things for us during that period. And then, of course, say they got rewarded by being named part of the Axis of Evil. And, you know, any number of officials, Iranian officials who served under Khatami, have told us over the years that that really was very damaging to Khatami and to them, that they had really put themselves out, had really put the Islamic Republic out to work with the United States over Afghanistan, and then, you know, had gotten this response from the Bush administration. That continued just a little bit later in 2003. People forget, but in 2003, Iran agreed with Europe actually to suspend the enrichment of uranium, over which, you know, everyone is now so exercised. Iran suspended for 2 years, almost 2 years, suspended the enrichment of uranium between 2003 and 2005, while Khatami was still the president, And the idea, the hope was that, you know, this would get the United States into a serious negotiation with Iran over the nuclear issue. And Iran at the time was prepared to accept what seemed, in certainly in retrospect, seemed to be some fairly stringent limits on the scope of its enrichment activities. But the Bush administration just blew this off and wouldn't talk. They, you know, Iran just had to surrender uranium enrichment, which is something it's legally entitled to do. Now if people had the kinds of deals on the table today that were that the Iranians were willing to discuss in 2003, 2004, 2005, we would think this was a fantastic outcome. But the Bush administration just blew that, really just blew that in a very thoughtless and ideologically driven way. Now, I have a very different read than Ray Takei on, you know, our ability to deal with the current Iranian leadership. I mean, Ayatollah Khamenei has been the supreme leader both when Khatami was president. He's the supreme leader now when Ahmadinejad was president, and he's very likely to, you know, be the supreme leader for some time to come, and including after Ahmadinejad leaves office. The comparison with China and Mao, and saying it's like the Maoists are still in charge in China. Well, keep in mind, Nixon made the initial deal. The initial opening to the People's Republic of China was done when Mao was in office, while the Cultural Revolution was still going on. And I think that is the kind of attitude that we need to take toward Iran. If we try and micromanage Iranian politics, we're not going to succeed, and it's going to miss real strategic opportunities for us. We should deal with the Iranian leadership that's in place. They are prepared to make a deal. Now, it's a deal in which we are going to have to accept their right to enrich. We're going to have to accept the Islamic Republic as a legitimate political entity that represents legitimate national interests. But if we were prepared to take that approach, we could have made a deal with Khatami on that basis. We could also make a deal with an Islamic Republic with Ahmadinejad as its president on that basis. And I think, you know, Ahmadinejad is leaving office next year. Whoever his successor is, I think we would be able to make a deal with the Islamic Republic on that basis. The basic requirements that Iran is looking for a better relationship with the United States haven't really changed from Khatami to Ahmadinejad, and I don't think they'll change much when Ahmadinejad is replaced next year. You know, we have to figure out what our interests are, which I think our interests would be very, very powerfully served by an opening to Iran. And then we have to think about what that is going to take. And it's going to take a willingness to stop demanding things of Iran that they won't do, that no real self-respecting sovereign state would do, and to come to terms with them on a basis of, you know, mutual interests and mutual respect. That's a deal we need to do for our own interests, and it's a deal that I think we can do with the present Iranian leadership. And, you know, I very strongly disagree with Ray on that. I agree that we blew lots of opportunities when Khatami was president, but we are continuing to blow those opportunities.
Well, there's a lot more to ask you, but I'm afraid we've run out of time, Flint. So let's do a follow-up soon.
I'd be very happy to do that, Ian. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Flint Leverett, who directs the Iran Project at the New America Foundation, where he's also a senior research fellow. He currently teaches at Pennsylvania State University School of International Affairs, and he served as a senior director of the Middle East Affairs at the National Security Council, on the Secretary of State's policy planning staff, and as a CIA senior analyst. He left the George W. Bush administration and government service in 2003 because of disagreements about Middle East policy and the conduct of the war on terror. He's the author of Dealing with Tehran, Assessing U.S. Diplomatic Options Towards Iran, and the forthcoming book, Going to Tehran, Why the United States Must Come to Terms with the Islamic Republic of Iran. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Afghanistan with Rajiv Chandrasekaran.
We expected something, something better than before. We expected something more. Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up in